Hi, and welcome to Women Committing Crimes. I am your disembodied voice, Tammy, and I am so happy you are joining me today. This is a podcast about, you guessed it, women who commit crimes. We'll have a chat about women throughout history who have committed the gambit of crimes from extremely violent murder, Catherine Knight, so gross, to prostitution, hi Heidi Fleiss, to bank robbery, stick 'em up Laura Bullion, to drug lords, godmother of cocaine, Griselda Blanca, human trafficking, shame, shame, Cheng Xiuping, to insider trading, Martha, and fraud, Elizabeth Holmes, stand up and be counted. These are just some of the crimes I have chatted about, but there are so much more I have talked about and so much more to be talked about. So, let's get started with this episode. But before we unveil our woman today, I want to remind listeners or inform you if you're new that the PS section, postscript, where I try to do updates. Not all these women have updates because most of them are dead. Anyway, the postscript will be up front here, and then I put the feedback section at the end. I'm trying to have less lead-in, with the exception of today, obviously, and last time, so we can get right to the heart of the podcast without too much housekeeping. I'm out of practice. Sorry I'm stumbling on my words. It's just weird. I'm out of practice. That way, also, if you're curious what other listeners have said, stick around, or you want to hear a shout out to yourself, you know, hang around with me until the end, and I'll sum it up with the feedback. So, a few updates. They're not like, you know, earth-shattering, but here they are. Martha Stewart tested positive for COVID just last week. Coincidentally, I did too. Well, anyway, I had COVID last week on Tuesday, June 21st. Is when I had extreme symptoms of COVID. I say extreme, but I don't think I had extreme. I think actually it was pretty mild in comparison to everybody else. And I want to say, you know, it was harsh. I had a rough day that day. I did feel better over the next week. But it's no joke. Coronavirus is no joke. It's terrible. So if you've had it and made it through, glad you're on the other side. If you've lost anyone to COVID, I'm very sorry. This is not a joke, right? So Martha Stewart testing positive for COVID. Elizabeth Holmes will be sentenced on September 26, 2022. She faces a maximum prison sentence of 20 years, but we'll see. You know how the rich and famous do. Andrea Yates, declined being released from the mental health facility she's in. She knows. She knew. Lorena Bobbitt was on the Drew Barrymore show this last April, interestingly enough, and is continuing her work with domestic violence survivors. Good for her. And then Carla Homolka, that bitch, is still free in Quebec. Has kids and, horrible person. She should still be in prison, in my opinion. If you're not sure about any of these women, please go back and listen to the episodes of each of them. They are interesting in their own rights, and the one with Martha Stewart has my partner of another podcast, Byron Alexander, in it, so please go back and listen to those. All right, so now let's get to our WCC of the episode, Rosemary West. If you're not from England, you might not have heard about her, but holy hell, this is one of the worst I've researched for this podcast. And there have been some really terrible ones that are similar to Rosemary West's crimes, like Carla Homolka. And it seems weird that even I didn't hear about this because the time frame is within the adult part of my life, albeit the beginning of adulthood for me, 80s, 90s. So was Carla Homolka, but since she was in Canada and Rosemary was in England, then maybe, you know, that kind of news doesn't hit Texas, the Texas papers, as easily. So much going on in the 80s and 90s, I guess. So much going on all the time. People say that, you know, like right now, there's so much going on, and there is, but we've kind of been here before, and we'll probably be here again. So there's always something going on. So also, what did Rosemary do? Well, as usual, I think it's best if we start at the beginning, but let me just say this disclaimer from the beginning. Her crimes are very heinous. They are sexual nature, and they do involve children. So I'm not going to go into detail as to what she and her evil husband did as far as like the actual, you just have to use your imagination. And I promise you, whatever dirty, nasty things, terrible, evil things you can think up in your head that somebody would do sexually to another person, they did it. So, again, I'm not going to, same with, I did that with Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardo, her husband. I did not go into extreme details, because one, I think it kind of disrespects the victims, you know, rehashing exactly what was done to them. And I don't ever want to do that, right? Especially because these are children. And I say children, they're under 18, most of them. They do have a couple victims that are above or over 18. But for the most part, they're kind of under, you know, they're right around that age or under. And I don't think that it's worth going into all those nasty details. And if you need somebody to go into those nasty details for you, I kind of question you. So maybe you should, you know, get that checked. Find somebody to talk to about why you need those details. Because, you know, I mean, this is a true crime podcast, and all humans have like a morbid curiosity when it comes to true crime and stuff. But I did not need to hear all the details, so I didn't go into those. But again, if you do, maybe you should talk to somebody about that. Anyway, enough on that. So let's start from the beginning. Rosemary was born Rosemary Letts on November 29th, 1953 in Northam, Devon, England. Northam is a market town in Devon, England. It's pretty small, with a current population of only about 7,000. Northam is thought to have been the site of an Anglo-Saxon earthwork fortification, so it's been around a bit. Devon, which is also known as Devonshire, is a county in southwest England down near Cornwall. All right, so, excuse me, I do still have a little bit of phlegm left over from COVID, so, you know, bear with me when I have to clear my throat and stuff, because if I went back in editing, that would take me forever, probably. So just kind of, you know, bear with me if you hear me clear my throat or cough or something. So anyway, Rosemary's parents. These fucking pieces of work. Rosemary's parents were William Andrew Bill Letts and Daisy Gwendolyn Fuller. Here's a little background on these upstanding human beings, if you're getting my sarcasm. Both had mental illnesses, which is not why I think they are pieces of shit, especially Bill. So you'll see why shortly. Again, I do not think that they are pieces of shit because of their mental illness, and I don't think the reason why I think they're a piece of shit is due to their mental illness. So, in 1950, Daisy and Bill moved into a new local authority house. So, local authority housing is welfare housing in England. That's what they call it. The city council decides if you are eligible and can get government housing. To be eligible to get government housing in England, at least at that time, you need to be eligible for public funds, like welfare, have a connection to the local area, which I find interesting, be unintentionally homeless. Yes, there are people who are intentionally homeless, but you have to be unintentionally homeless and have a priority need. So they qualified for that. Bill was away a lot, and Daisy began to show signs of depression. She developed a mania for hygiene and became obsessed with having a clean house. Bill was also obsessed with cleanliness, which probably contributed to Daisy's depression. You know, if your husband's coming home every day and, you know, doing the dust test on the mantle and stuff, right? Bill was a control freak as well, which usually people who become obsessed with cleanliness do become control freaks as well. He controlled the household with an iron fist. He told Daisy who she could and couldn't speak to. According to Andrew, one of Rosemary's six siblings, so one of Daisy and Bill's six or seven children, quote, "We were not allowed to speak and play like normal children. If we were noisy, he would go for us with a belt or chunk of wood," end quote. Chunk of wood, that's so weird. Is that like maybe a paddle? I'm not sure. Daisy, being diagnosed with clinical depression, which is defined as a serious mood disorder with persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness, loss of interest in activities once enjoyed, she began receiving electroconvulsive therapy. So that's called ECT. It's a treatment most commonly used for those with major depression. It is a brief electrical stimulation of the brain while the patient is under anesthesia. So, electric shock therapy, right? It is used when other treatments don't work. It seems to work, though, because according to my sources, there is substantial improvement in 80% of the patients that receive this treatment. Daisy received ECTs all the way up until a few days before Rosemary was born. Now, there are some that speculate that Rosemary, as a baby, was affected in a negative way by this, because they say she was cognitively slow, which, when I explain some stuff to you, it's kind of lends itself to her being slow. And when she was a baby and small child, she would rock back and forth, banging her head against her crib, sometimes so hard that it would move the crib across the floor. She also did a lot of rocking motions and banging her head against walls when she was a little bit older. But according to the American Psychiatric Association and American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, ECT is safe during pregnancy. So, you know, there's kind of, but this is back in the 50s, right? So lots of people believe lots of different things, I guess. Bill suffered from paranoid schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is defined as a severe chronic mental disorder characterized by disturbances in thought, perception, and behavior. It involves a range of cognitive, behavioral, and emotional symptoms, which include delusions, hallucinations, disorganized speech, and grossly disorganized or catatonic behavior. Paranoid schizophrenia is all of that, with the addition of a preoccupation with one or more of those delusions or hallucinations, usually people out to get you, people watching you, that kind of stuff. To learn more about these conditions, I really talk about them a lot in the Andrea Yates episode of this podcast, because a lot of that applied to her as well. So if you want to know more about those psychological issues, please listen to the Andrea Yates episode. Again, these aren't the things that make me think that Bill and Daisy are pieces of shit, especially because, well, I'll explain that in just a second. So Bill, and this is why, Bill began sexually abusing Rosemary and her older sister, Patricia, before they hit puberty. So puberty usually, it depends, right? It's different for all children. I unfortunately hit puberty at the age of 9. I know, very early, right? And I know that's probably TMI, but, you know, just to put it in perspective, the average, though, is like around 12, 13. Puberty for a female being when she starts her menstrual cycle, right? Yeah, I was 9. But, probably around 12, I think it was, for Rosemary and Patricia, my sources said. He told them, Bill told them that this was normal, and that's what men did to daughters, you know, to kind of prepare them for marriage and the outside world. It happened so much and was so normalized in that household that Rosemary, at the outset of puberty, 12, 13, would parade around naked in front of her younger brother, Graham. At age 13, Rosemary would get in bed naked with Graham and her youngest brother, Gordon, and fondle and sexually abuse them. This is why, in my opinion, Bill is a piece of shit. And I truly believe that his sexual abuse had nothing to do with his mental illness. And I, you know, I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist, doctor, but in all the research I did for Andrea Yates and several other people also when it comes to schizophrenia for this podcast, I've never seen sexual abuse or the propensity to abuse children in particular your own children, to abuse them sexually as like a symptom or condition of major depression or schizophrenia. So I think even if he wasn't schizophrenic, he'd still be a sexual predator and one of the worst human beings on the planet, in my opinion. All right, so I'm going to step away from Rosemary here a bit because, okay, so that's the background she comes from. It gets worse, though. So now I have to talk about her future husband, Fred West, because what happens later is really contingent upon her meeting this pile of shit. And he is truly was truly one of the worst people to ever exist on this planet. He's actually worse than that piece of shit, Paul Bernardo. And I know I keep mentioning Paul and Carla, but really, I thought they were the worst pieces of shit on the planet when it comes to this type of crime, but I was wrong. They're right up there, though. Fred West. Okay, so let's talk about him. He was born in 1941, so if you're starting to do the math, hang tight. It gets worse. He was an ignorant fucker who could barely read and write. His father, this is terrible, his father, and this is from more than one source, his father sexually abused Fred's sisters. Fred's mother sexually abused Fred, and Fred and his sisters sexually abused each other. Okay, so, and again, this family, the ignorant fucks that they were, thought this was normal, like the parents told the kids, so they grew up this, and Fred even got his 13-year-old sister pregnant. Yeah. It gives me, He was a petty thief, of course he was, and sustained a closed head injury in a serious motorcycle accident, which only perpetuated his depravity. So, like, he had the motorcycle accident after, and the reason why I say that is people can often have personality changes after a closed head injury, but in this case, it didn't change his personality. It, like, exacerbated it, like, made it just worse than it already was. In 1962, Fred secretly married Catherine Costello, who went by the name Rena. They moved to Scotland. Rena was from Scotland. Rena was already pregnant with a daughter, who she named Charmaine, before she was already pregnant before she married Fred, and she was pregnant by a student that was from India, so she named the baby Charmaine. Fred was into violent sex, which didn't always agree with Rena, and Rena's not the brightest bulb either. Rena eventually worked as a prostitute. Again, very low education for this group of people. In 1964, Rena had Fred's baby, a daughter they named Anne Marie. So they've got Charmaine and Anne Marie. They met a woman, 18-year-old Anne McFall, and the three of them moved in together in Gloucester when Fred got a job at a slaughterhouse, which, you know, if you're already into violence and stuff, we learned from Catherine Knight that a slaughterhouse is probably not the best place for something like that to work. But anyway, because you learn how to cut things up, right? Gloucester is a city in County Gloucestershire, England. I think I'm saying that correctly. It's in southwest England, down near Wales, on the River Severn. It was founded by the Romans and granted its first city charter by Henry II in 1155. It's about 15.65 square miles, with a current population of about 129,128. Rena proves over time to be a bit flaky, besides, you know, not very bright. She moves in and out of Fred and her daughter's lives for many years, starting in 1965, when she runs away to Scotland and leaves both daughters with Fred and Anne. She came back in 1966 to find Fred and Anne living in a caravan, which is basically a double-wide trailer. They live in a trailer park. Also, there had been 8 sexual assaults in the area, with the perpetrator fitting the description of Fred. And Rena is at least smart enough to know that, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. So Fred, if you look at the picture of Fred, he has a very distinctive look. I think it's so gross. So, those pictures obviously are going to be on the website. So visit womencommittingcrimes.com so you can see those pictures. But so, you know, Rena at least knows that if the description fits Fred, she knows he's gross, right? Then it probably is Fred. So Rena moved out with Charmaine and Anne-Marie, her daughters, then went to the police and told them that her husband was a sexual pervert and she felt that her daughters were unsafe. She spoke with Detective Constable Hazel Savage, who will pop up again many years later. Nothing comes of her complaint, and as this case moves on, you'll see that so much was ignored by the police and everyone else who came in contact with any of these people, teachers, the police, neighbors, you know, We all know that laws back in the day, when it comes to kidnap, just, things were a little bit more loosey-goosey than they are now. I don't know how it was in England, but it just seems like this just went under the radar so blatantly for a very long time. Anyway, 1967, Anne McFall, that woman that was living with them, was pregnant with Fred's baby. Of course she was. She wanted him to divorce Rena and marry her, but he didn't want to, so he just killed Anne. Most of the sources for this case don't say how Fred murdered most of the victims, so I assume due to his penchant for violent sex and just his depraved personality, it was probably strangulation. Anyway, he killed Anne, which also killed the fetus, then dismembered her and buried her in a field in Muchmarkle. Muchmarkle, which means great field, is a very small village. I know that's kind of an oxymoron, but it's a very small village of about 660 people in Herefordshire, England, and it's very old. It dates back to 1086 AD CE, for those that know that. All right, so that's one verified murder. I say verified, and you'll see why later. Well, Rena moved back in with Fred. Of course she did. Pretty sure she wasn't, like I said, very bright, and then she began working as a prostitute again. That's when Fred began molesting Charmaine openly. She was 4. In 1969, Fred, looking like a bum, was hanging out at the bus station in Cheltenham, which is in Gloucestershire. It's a spa town with a population of about 116,000. Yeah, it was first recorded as a place in 803, so old like everything else in England. the oldness of places in other countries really fascinates me. You know, as an American, the oldest that, I mean, we have some old stuff that goes back to the colonies, but still when you think about it, that's only like 300 years. It's like not, I mean, these things go back sometimes before that. I mean, there's Roman roads in England, right? I mean, there's places in this world that go back even before the Egyptians, you know? So to me, that's very fascinating. Again, America is really, really young. All the buildings in America are young, all that stuff. So it's fascinating. Anyway, Cheltenham hosts several festivals of culture every year. I found this really kind of cool. They have a festival for literature, a separate one for jazz, a separate one for just music in general, for cricket, that game, and food and drink. I found that interesting. So, while Fred was being the creepy man hanging out in the bus station, he met 15-year-old Rosemary. He was 27, so hopefully you're doing the math here. That's fucking gross. She thought rightfully that he was gross at first, good for you, but he would sit next to her and ask her out on a date. She said no at first. It seems this happened more than once. You know, things are sketchy about that. He found out where she worked. She worked at this bread shop. He sent a woman in with a gift for Rose, saying that a man outside wanted to take her on a date. Accost a stranger. Hey, go give that little girl over there. I'm a gross man. Go give that little girl over there, who's 15, this note. Oh, gross. Anyway, she finally accepted, which is double gross to me. They started a relationship. Rose became a full-time nanny to Anne-Marie and Charmaine. Fred would give Rose enough money to give to her parents so they would think she was still working at the bread shop. Again, weird. Later, Rose introduced Fred to her family. Now, they were shocked that he was so much older than her. Again, 27 and she's 15. Right? Oddly, Bill threatened Fred, saying he would call social services because Rose was a minor. Fucking hypocrite. Or maybe he just wanted to molest his daughter to himself and not share her. Anyway, Bill and Daisy forbid Rose from seeing Fred. She did anyway, of course. You know, Bill and Daisy went to social services because they also heard that she was prostituting, which she was. Rose was then placed in a home for troubled teens in Cheltenham in August 1969. On her 16th birthday, November 1969, she left the home and returned to her parents. At this time, Fred was in jail on a theft charge, serving about 30 days. Of course he was. Again, petty theft. I think it was some bicycles or something. When Fred was released, Rose joined him in an apartment he rented in Cheltenham. Yep, Rena was gone again. So when he was put in jail, the kids had been put in like foster care with social services. So then when he got out of jail, moved into the apartment with Rose, he got the kids back. Again, just... Then again, I live in Texas, and Texas has some of the worst when it comes to foster care, child protective services. God, The state sucks. But anyway, in 1970, 17-year-old Rose was pregnant with Fred's baby. Gross again. They moved to Midland Road in Gloucester. Heather Ann was born October 1970. Okay, in December 1970, Fred went back to prison for theft again and was there until June 24th, 1971, and that's important. So now, 17-year-old Rose is responsible for all three children, right? Charmaine, Anne Marie, and her own daughter, Heather. She physically abused the kids. She tied Anne Marie and Charmaine up so they wouldn't bug her. She hit them, kicked them. At this time, Charmaine was like 9 and Anne Marie is like 7. Charmaine had been sexually abused regularly and openly for about 5 years at this point. And from all the sources, Charmaine was sassy too, you know, which good for her. She's a kid. And Anne Marie had said in the past that Charmaine was always sassy. One day, though, Charmaine disappeared while Fred was still in prison. Rose told people that Rena had come to get her. Her story, though, was different every time she talked to somebody. She would say that Rena took her to Bristol or London or Scotland. That's the one that she told Fred. When Fred got out of prison, Rose told him that Rena had come to get Charmaine and took her to Scotland, but later Fred discovered Charmaine's body stuffed in the coal cellar. Rose had killed her. Fred then buried Charmaine's body in the yard close to the back door. Rena did come back, though, and wanted to know where her daughter was. Of course she did. Fred and Rose ignored her. Rena, instead of going to the cops, you know, because there's already a previous complaint filed back in 1966 or whatever. Maybe she went to the cops. This would have been solved a little bit earlier, but, you know, hindsight, right? So instead of going to the cops, Rena went to Fred's family to find out where he was because she did not know where he lived, but, you know, called him and all that kind of stuff. And she did this in August 1971. His family told her where he was, and she showed up at the door. They decided to invite her inside. They got her drunk. Everybody was, you know, hanging out. Then they killed her by, she was murdered by strangulation. Her body was dismembered, then buried in pieces near Muchmarkle. The pieces had been placed in plastic bags. She was buried close to a cluster of trees known as Yew Tree Coppice at Letterbox Field in Muchmarkle. Well, with Rena out of the way, Fred and Rose got married in January of 1972. How? Right? Rena's still on the books as his wife. Fred, of course, falsified the marriage certificate. They had another daughter in June of 1972 and named her May. So, Charmaine's missing, right? She's dead, all right? So there's still Anne Marie left over from Rena and Fred. And then there's Heather and May, and Rose is their mom. So there's three right there. The family moved to 25 Cromwell Street in Gloucester, which will be their last move. The house had a garage and a cellar, which becomes a torture chamber, a sex torture chamber. This is terrible. Okay, so it was a three-story house, and they rented out most of the upstairs rooms, all except for one, of which they called Mandy's room. Now, who's Mandy? Well, that's Rose's whore name. Rose became a prostitute at this time. So are you doing the math? She's like 19 at this time. She's got these kids. She's married to Fred, and who's like at this time he's like not working at the slaughterhouse anymore. He's like a builder. So Rose is a prostitute formally. She even she advertises in local classifieds for clients. She had sex with male and female lodgers. I mean, she's bisexual. Okay, fine. And she also has sex with, you know, people Fred might bring home. She and Fred are into violent bondage and inflicting pain. Fred had created peepholes in Mandy's room so he could watch Rose have sex. He also put in a baby monitor so he could listen. There's a red light outside the door. So those in the house, the kids, mind you, would know when Rose was with a client. The room also had its own doorbell, so that way when clients came to the house, they could ring the doorbell of the room, and then she would turn the red light on. Please remember that there are children in this house from, like, ages 8 down, right? There's going to be more. So by 1983, Rose had given birth to 8 children, right? 2 of them are Heather and May. And then she has 6 more kids, and at least 4 of those are by different clients. Oh my God. The depravity and fucking stupid ignorance is just pisses me off all around. When each of the kids turned 7, they were given chores and were not allowed to socialize outside the household. They were punished physically by Rose for violations of these rules. The sexual abuse of Anne Marie, now that Charmaine was gone, began when she was 8. She was then forced into prostitution at age 13, but Rose told her clients that she was 16, which does not make it better at all, in my opinion. But now let's talk about some of the other victims. Okay. It's going to be like a laundry list here, I know, but I think they deserve some respect here. October 1972, Carolyn Owens, 17, was hitchhiking on a deserted road, as people did back in the 70s, which, please don't do that. She was offered a ride by Rose and Fred. Caroline had had an argument with her boyfriend, of course, and was headed back home. She had arguments off and on with her stepdad, so she had, lived with her boyfriend, and then her boyfriend and her had a fight, so she's going to go back home. Anyway, what were the West doing on a deserted road? Well, like Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardo, they were driving around just looking for young women to abduct and sexually abuse and kill. So to get Caroline in the car, they said they were looking for a nanny for their kids. She agreed to be that nanny and moved in, bunking with Anne Marie. The West tried to seduce Caroline, but she said no and that she would move out. But the West knew, so she was going to go home. So the West knew where she usually hitchhiked, and they pre-planned to abduct, rape, and kill her. All 3, yeah. So when they found her, they got her to get back in the car by apologizing. But when she got in the car, Fred punched her in the face until she went unconscious. They bound and gagged her and took her back to the house and locked her in a room. Caroline was then drugged and raped repeatedly. They then decided not to kill her. They offered her for her to be their nanny again. These people, oh my God. Caroline, seeing a way to escape, of course, said yes. She was able to escape. She and Rose went out with the kids, and then that's when she was able to escape. She ran home, told her mom what happened. Her mom reported it to the police. The West were arrested and charged with assault, indecent assault, actual bodily harm, and rape, unfortunately. Caroline could not face all of this in public and decided not to testify. This happens a lot with rape cases. The victim is often embarrassed and made to feel embarrassed through victim shaming as if it was their fault. I'm not saying that that's what happened, but probably. Especially, back in the 1970s, before the hashtag MeToo movement and stuff, when especially they blamed girls for everything. And due to her not testifying, all the charges were dropped, except one small one, so the West only had to pay a fine. Caroline regretted this the rest of her life, and even got so depressed, she tried to commit suicide later. Luckily, it did not work. I don't know whatever happened to her, because I think people should leave her alone if she's still around. So I did not want to pursue that too much. The next victim was Linda Goff, G-O-U-G-H, I think that's how you say that, who was a seamstress. She had moved into one of the rooms the West rented out. She had sex with both of them, was murdered, dismembered, and buried under the floor of the garage. November 1973, the Wests abducted Carol Ann Cooper. She was 15 years old. They did their same old song and dance, rape, murder, dismember, bury under the house. December 1973, Lucy Partington, a university student, accepted a ride by the Wests. She was raped and tortured for a week, murdered, dismembered, and buried under the house. There were 3 more. 15-year-old Shirley Hubbard, 19-year-old Juanita Mott, 21-year-old Teresa, she was Swedish, so I can't really say her last name, Siegenthaler. All 3 were subjected to extreme bondage, raped, killed, buried. In 1977, 18-year-old Shirley Robinson moved in as a lodger. She had sex with Rose and Fred. At the time, Rose was pregnant with a client's baby. Shirley became pregnant with Fred's baby. Rose killed Shirley, probably out of jealousy, and buried her in the backyard. August 1979, 17-year-old Allison Chamber was abducted, raped, murdered, buried in the backyard. Now, these are all confirmed, by the way. These aren't like, well, maybe they killed this person. These are all confirmed through DNA, their bones, all that stuff. There were probably more over the next 10 years, though, but the next proven one happened in May of 1987. This was one of the worst, in my opinion. The West daughter, Heather, had spoken to a friend about the abuse at home, the physical and definitely the sexual abuse. When Rose found out that Heather had told on her, she began to beat Heather, who was 16 at the time. Then when Heather fell on the floor, Rose proceeded to kick her in the head until she was dead. Now, that testimony comes from one of Rose's sons, who witnessed it. According to that son, all the kids kind of witnessed it. Heather was buried under the patio, and this was the last known murder the West committed. Known murder. Yeah. 1992. Let's jump to how they get caught. One of the 13-year-old girls they had abducted, and did not murder, interestingly enough, told a friend about her experience, and that friend told the police. Good on you, that friend. Fred was then arrested for raping a 13-year-old, and Rose was arrested for child cruelty. The case was assigned to Hazel, D.C. Detective Constable Hazel Savage, the officer from when Rena went to the police in 1966, and she remembered Fred. Rose was out on bail, but Fred stayed in jail. Anne Marie talked openly about the abuse to Savage, to Detective Savage. She said how she was suspicious about what happened to Charmaine. When the police began investigating about Charmaine, they could not find Rena. Stephen, one of the West sons, spoke about Heather. He was the one that gave the testimony about what he saw, and that no one had seen her since 1987. The police began investigating that also and found that in the last 5 years, there were no records of Heather having a job, paying taxes, going to a doctor, nothing. Rose had told people that Heather was a lesbian and had had a, you know, a row or a fight with her parents and moved out, and they hadn't heard from her. The younger kids, were sent to social services, and Rose tried to commit suicide, but Stephen found and saved her. Unfortunately, this happens again. The case collapsed when several key witnesses, in particular the West's children, refused to testify, and Fred was set free, like Anne Marie refused to testify at first. However, Detective Savage continued to investigate about Heather. Good for Detective Savage. Good for her. Savage was able to get a search warrant. I couldn't find out how, but I guess, you know, continuing on with that, that Heather, investigation, she was able to get a search warrant to dig up the West's garden, you know, their backyard and stuff. There, she discovered bones, which turned out to be Heather, Shirley Robinson, and Alice Chambers. Fred was once again arrested and took full responsibility, saying Rose had nothing to do with any of it. The investigation now was broadened to include Rena and Charmaine and Anne McFall. Fred said he murdered them all and showed the police where all the bodies were buried. Rose denied that she had anything to do with it. Of course she did, right? February 1994, so we're going to get to the end of it here. February 1994, Fred confessed to Janet Leach, his assigned appropriate adult, that Rose killed Shirley Robinson. So let me explain what a assigned appropriate adult is. This is weird to me. In English law, an appropriate adult is a parent, guardian, or social worker, or if no person matching this is available, any responsible person over 18. Hey, you, on the street. I don't have a parent. I don't have a guardian. There's no social workers. Could you please be my responsible person over 18? Now, what does that person do? Well, the term was introduced as part of the policing reforms in the Police and Criminal Evidence Act 1984 and applies in England and Wales. This appropriate adult must be present for a range of police processes, including interviews, intimate searches, and identification procedures, as detailed in the Police and Criminal Evidence Act 1984, Codes of Practice, primarily Code C. So my guess is this. I should have researched it more fully, but it just seems logical that this passed in 1984. So there must have been a lot of things where police yeah, conducted searches, did interviews, that kind of stuff. And it's a he said, she said thing to where they say that the criminal said this, and the criminal's like, no, I didn't say that. So they, to protect the criminal and also maybe even to protect the police, there's somebody there, somebody else there that can advocate for the prisoner and be a witness to all this stuff. Now, how is that different, I'm asking, than like recorded conversations? Again, I didn't go full stop into investigating that, but I'm curious. I might have to go back and re-research that, because usually in this country, you know, you have the cops, you have like the two-way mirror, you know, all the stuff you see on TV shows or movies, as well as, you know, they record any interviews, that kind of stuff. So I'm wondering what the difference with that and, you know, why this appropriate adult came about. But either way, Fred told the appropriate adult, Janet Leach, who was a social worker, that Rose had killed Shirley Robinson. So that was one murder he did not confess to. So, in April 1994, Rose was charged with a sex offense. December 1994, Fred was charged with 12 murders. And then, this piece of shit, on January 1st, 1995, Fred hung himself, with bedsheets in prison. He was 53. I don't know what the death penalty is in England, but that was too good for him. He got out the easy way, but at least he's fucking dead, right? February 1995, Rose pleaded not guilty to 10 counts of murder. Well, October 3rd, 1995, Rose's trial began. There was 7 weeks of testimony. People actually did testify this time. Then the jury returned with a unanimous guilty verdict. Fuck yeah. She was sentenced to life without parole. Fuck yeah. Her appeal in 1996 was denied. Then in 1997, Rose was resentenced to whole life tariff. What does that mean? This is a court order whereby a prisoner is sentenced to life imprisonment without any possibility of parole or conditional release. So there's two life sentences in England. One, life, right? You're sentenced to life in prison, but that leaves the door open for appeals and parole or conditional release, like you're dying, so we'll just release you. But a whole life is what in America is just, you know, life without possibility of parole. So basically you are in there forever, right? In 2000, Rose tried another appeal that was denied. And in 2008, she was transferred to Low Newton, all women's prison. So this is interesting because I gotta explain what type of prison this is. So in England, criminals are divided into four categories. And the way that British put things is just, it's funny to me. So the first is the worst. It's restricted status. Restricted status is if the prisoner escaped, they would be highly dangerous to the public or national security. So this is a maximum security situation for murderers, rapists, armed robbery, all the nasty stuff. And yes, Rose was a murderer. Yes, she's a rapist, but she wasn't like prowling the streets. I think they're talking about, you know, more that kind of rapist. I don't know. Seems to me like she should still be in maximum security, but anyway. The second type of criminal is closed. This is women who don't require restricted status, but for whom escape needs to be really difficult. Just the way they put that. Women who don't require restricted status, but for whom escape needs to be really difficult. Like, we want to make it difficult for you to escape. And it's funny because of the next two. Number three, semi-open. Criminals are unlikely to escape, but can't be trusted in an open prison. What's an open prison? This one gets me. Open. Those who are trusted to stay in prison. So I'm assuming low security, right? I just think that's funny. You're going to stay here, right? Yeah, I'm going to stay here. You sure? Because if not, we might have to put you, like, in semi-open, but you'll stay here, right? Sure, yeah, I'll stay. They said I should be in prison. I'll be in prison. Yeah, sure. Anyway, Low Newton is a closed prison, so women who don't require restricted status but for whom escape needs to be really difficult. So that's where she is. But, you know, by 2008, would Rose really try to escape? Maybe, maybe. She's not a fucking genius, though. So the idea of her even coming up with a plan to escape, nah. In 2020, there was a TV documentary in Britain about Rose West and Myra Hindley. Myra Hindley was also a rapist, like worse from what I understand than Rose West. She will be a future WCC episode. She's in my book. They told their story to Trevor MacDonald, who is a famous, British news guy, and I guess they got close years ago because both being bisexual, but then they became rivals to be like prison queen. The West children are doing the best they can. Some have given interviews. Anne Marie wrote a book called Out of the Shadows, and luckily for the neighbors, the house has been demolished. Because, I mean, seriously. So, Rosemary West, a woman committing crimes. Honestly, this one, it is as bad as Carla Homolka, and both of these women are just the worst people on the planet. There's other serial killers, right? Serial killing just as, but I guess it's the fact that they turned on their own family. And for both these women, the question is, would they have done these kind of things if it wasn't for the men they were with? Like Carla Homolka didn't do this kind of stuff until she met Paul Bernardo, who was, by the way, the Scarborough rapist in Canada. God, that guy is like, would Rosemary have done this kind of these crimes if it wasn't for Fred West? Both of them, again, ignorant fucks, right? Both of them sexually depraved, grew up in the same type of household, just terrible people. But would they? He probably would have continued to rape and kill because he did before he even met Rose. But would Rose have done it? I want to say probably, at least on some scale. She would have, obviously sexually abused her children. I can't imagine her becoming married to anybody else but somebody like Fred West. You know, like depravity attracts depravity, I guess because she's also dumb as fuck, she wouldn't be like, oh my God, this isn't normal. I need to go get therapy and blah, 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 because her family was so fucked up. So I just, it's just some of those questions that I always kind of contemplate. But I think, yeah, I think she would have, it would have ended up bad no matter what. It would have ended up bad for other people no matter what. No matter who she would have probably married, she would always have married somebody that was just as terrible as her. Fred West just happened to be even more terrible and led her down that path. But how young she was, makes me sick too. The whole entire thing is just terrible. So, that's again, Rosemary West, a woman committing crimes. So here we are. I don't have any feedback this week, except another person on Apple Podcasts gave me 3 stars. That's fine. That's great. Yay. I always do like like it when you leave like comments though. That's great too. If you have an idea or feedback, please email me at womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com or tweet at crimeswomen, or best yet, go to the website womencommittingcrimes.com, where you'll find a list of women that you can pick from. Or if you know of a WCC, a woman committing a crime, let me know. I'll take it on. That's what happened with Elizabeth Holmes and Carla Homolka. Both of those were listeners' suggestions, and they both ended up being fantastic, right? Please go to Apple Podcasts and give Women Committing Crimes a 5-star rating and leave a comment, please. That's, Apple Podcasts is like the number one for podcasts, up there with like iHeartRadio. So, please give us some feedback. Now for the thank yous. Thank you to my wonderful and loving husband, Doug, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the podcast Off Kilter No Filter. Off Kilter No Filter is a podcast about anything and everything, literally, with me and Byron Alexander. We just finished one that's going to come out soon. What about Prince? Yeah. one of my favorites of all time. May he rest in peace. And then one of our latest ones also is about our COVID experiences. seems these days that, you know, everybody has that experience. Check it out wherever you listen to podcasts. Same with this. Come listen to both these podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Continue listening on to what you're listening to it now, right? Thank you to Byron Alexander for the music for this podcast. The intro song is Forgive Me, and the outro song is Who, both on Byron's amazing album, Square One. There's a link for it in the description. I'm pretty sure I'll remember, but... And if you'd like a little preview of the dynamic of Byron and Tammy, make sure to listen to the Martha Stewart episode, as I mentioned before. He's my first and only so far guest. I gotta remedy that. I gotta, like, get these in mind so I can have somebody with me. Now for next time. I've read several books recently who have mentioned our next WCC, so I looked her up and she is fascinating. In fact, I'm going to read her autobiography to get the information for this, as well as other sources, of course. I don't rely just on one source. So our next WCC is Phoolan Devi. Yes, the bandit queen turned politician in India. Fascinating. Young badass. So until next time. Bye-bye.